most people have at least some time to let the advantages of investing in real estate work in their favor.
Number 2. How much real estate would an investor need to acquire today to receive $1 million in annual cash flow in the future?
Factoring for time works in an investor's favor because it allows the investor to account for appreciation in real estate values and rents, both of which historically tend to appreciate at about 5% a year. Using the same assumptions, but this time including our regular 20% down payment for 15-year or 30-year mortgages, let's examine how much real estate an investor would have to acquire today to achieve $1 million in unearned income in 10, 20, or 30 years. This time will allow our hypothetical investor to let the market forces work in his or her favor. Figure 120 on the bonus CD depicts six different scenarios in which this could play out. Three are for 15-year mortgages, and three are for 30-year mortgages. Pick a quadrant that matches your timeline and take a moment to consider the numbers. In this model, the numbers take an astounding turn to the investor's advantage. With a 10-year window, the investor would need to invest $6.9 million with 15-year mortgages or $3.9 million with 30-year mortgages to achieve $1 million in pre-tax income. With a 20-year window, the investor would have to invest just under $1 million with 15-year mortgages or $1.5 million with 30-year mortgages. Finally, given a 30-year time frame, one would need to invest between $595,000 and $768,000. All these scenarios produce strong and, in some cases, remarkable rates of return on investment that would satisfy most millionaire real estate investors. What keeps this scenario in the realm of the hypothetical for most individuals is the necessity of buying all those properties in just 1 year. Let's look at our third model, where the investor can purchase properties over time to achieve $1 million in unearned income in the future.
How much real estate would an investor need to acquire over time to receive $1 million in annual cash flow in the future?
In this model, we'll factor for both time in the market and the time it takes to acquire the portfolio of a cash flow millionaire. What's instructive about this model is that it shows investors the average number and market value of the homes they will have to buy each year to meet their unearned income goal. Furthermore, it shows the amount of money an investor will have to invest on average each year, a key driver in setting one's budgeting and savings goals. Refer to Figure 121 from the bonus CD, and you will see this model also depicts six scenarios that are based on the mortgage loan selected and the time frame. Take a moment to review each scenario and the numbers they represent. What immediately jumps off the page in this analysis is the growth of net cash flow over time. In the 10-year scenario, there is a marked benefit to choosing the increased cash flow of the 30-year mortgage, 17.1 homes purchased each year, over the equity buildup of the 15-year mortgage, 39.9 homes purchased each year. In fact, the investor's acquisitions are more than cut in half. However, this is reversed once the 15-year mortgage has been paid off in the 20-year and 30-year scenarios. If you are looking for cash flow and have time to grow it, accelerated debt paydown may get you there faster and with fewer overall acquisitions.
Number 4. How much real estate would an investor need to acquire over time to receive $1 million in annual cash flow and equity pullout in the future?
In the last and most comprehensive model, which is detailed in Figure 122 on the bonus CD, we're going to accelerate the process by factoring in the fact that equity buildup can be used as a source of income. As you know, there are two ways to achieve income from investment real estate. First, investors can receive cash flow from their investments. Second, they have the additional option of tapping into and pulling out their equity buildup. Equity buildup, the combination of value appreciation and debt paydown, is very real. In fact, until the mortgage debt is completely paid off, there will be greater average annual returns from equity buildup than from cash flow in almost any scenario. As we discussed in Own a Million, millionaire real estate investors who are in the growth phase of their investing always manage their return on equity to keep their money working hard for them. That's why they rarely look for a 100% equity position in their properties, much less their portfolios. Our research and experience show that the best, most prudent investors will manage this to range from a minimum of 20% to a maximum of around 70% before pulling some equity out. In the beginning, equity pullout often is used for reinvestment in more property to accelerate the process. The beautiful thing about equity pulled out periodically through refinancing is that this equity income is tax-free. The IRS sees this income for what it is, a liability incurred. These investors count on appreciation and their tenants to pay down their debt and build up their equity so they can repeat this process. This equity pullout can be periodic or all at once, with the primary considerations being the investor's desired ratio of equity to debt and the cost of refinancing. However, any time an investor reaches the $20 million equity mark and is achieving at least 5% annual appreciation, that investor is, in effect, getting $1 million a year in tax-free income if he or she chooses to pull it out. In all the scenarios in this fourth and final model, the investor buys fewer properties and invests less to reach his or her net income goal. As the time frame of the investment plans lengthens, the investor has the extra bonus of having to lead generate for fewer and fewer genuinely great investment prospects each year. In fact, in the 30-year scenario, the investor must find an average of only one outstanding property every 2 years. Whether your goals are for today, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, or even 30 years in the future, we hope you are motivated to do your own math. It's about asking the $1 million unearned income question in a personal way. Will your criteria allow you to buy for less and achieve more? How will the real estate and rental values in your market affect your personal equation? Where is your comfort level with your leverage? Do you want to keep a high equity position in your properties for security, or would you prefer a lower one for greater rates of return? One of the things we discussed in Own a Million was the concept that millionaire investors think in units. Interestingly, when you apply the powerful leverage of trading up to larger multifamily investment properties to this equation, $1 million in unearned annual income becomes far more approachable. As we've learned, by consolidating property management and leasing into fewer properties, investors can lay claim to higher rental rates than the 0.8% we've considered for single-family rentals, while having fewer management issues. In fact, one of the investors we interviewed built an amazing investment business by buying and selling real estate for investment income and then reinvesting in larger multifamily and commercial properties that now generate $12 million in annual profits. That, by the way, is $1 million a month.
$1 million a month. The inspirational story of investor number 34.
One of my favorite stories is that of a millionaire investor we interviewed in California who built a remarkable real estate investment business that generates $12 million in annual profits. Since he was our 34th interview, and out of respect for his wish to remain anonymous, we'll call him Investor 34. Investor 34 started his investment business on savings and credit cards, and for the first 6 months he and his wife worked from their kitchen table. By that measure, his success should feel repeatable to most people. He didn't have the advantage of beginning his investment career with large sums of money. The niche he latched onto was buying limited partnership interests in real estate. He and his wife would obtain lists of the limited partners from the general partners, which, by law, they were required to share, then mail those investors a marketing piece offering to buy their interest. At the time, they would offer as little as $50 for shares that were valued at about $100, and roughly 5% of the people they mailed to would take them up on their offer. But then a rising tide in the California real estate market swept them up and helped them turn as much as $150 in profit on each share they acquired. As this investor said, their goal wasn't to be the biggest company around. It was to be the most profitable. So they'd rather do a lot of small transactions that are highly profitable than a big transaction that generates the same amount of net income. Their business success was limited by how much time they could devote to the mailings. A big breakthrough came when this investor's wife called the printer and asked if he could print, address, and stuff the mailings for them. All of a sudden, they went from mailing 1,000 marketing pieces a month to 5,000, and then 10,000, 20,000, and 30,000. Their response rates and profit margins were the same whether they mailed 1,000 or 100,000, so the profitability of the company went way up. Rather than treat the money as income and consume it, they reinvested directly in real estate, apartment buildings, and storage facilities, to build a stable platform of residual income. Today, Investor 34 owns over 4,000 apartment units and more than 1 million square feet of storage rentals. Amazingly, he nets over $12 million annually from the $45 million in gross revenues. His little investment business has grown into a big investment business. Obviously, more than he and his wife could maintain at their kitchen table. Currently, he has over 60 direct employees divided among 5 investment companies and another 100 independent contractors who manage his apartment buildings. What I love about Investor 34's story isn't that he built his multi-million dollar investment business so cleverly in little increments of $100 and $150 reinvested in real estate. It's that he discovered a powerful way to take him farther while working less. People leverage. It really wasn't about the money, he told us. I wanted to set my own schedule, and mostly I wanted to be able to spend more time with my family. Investor 34 works about 20 hours a week. He doesn't carry a cell phone or a pager because he wants to be connected when he wants to be connected. He spends more and more time with his family. In our language, Investor 34 is well down the path of receive a million. In fact, he's at a point on the path where it's possible to receive $1 million a month. But no matter what amount of unearned income he receives at the end of his journey, whether it's more or less, I know he's already discovering the amazing freedom that comes when you can step out of your daily investment business without losing your income. It's what we call the seventh level, the path to people leverage.
The seventh level, the path to people leverage.
If you're like Investor 34 or any of the other millionaire real estate investors we interviewed, you'll find that as your investment business grows, you will rely increasingly on others to perform the day-to-day tasks of investing while you manage the process. This is the natural evolution of a growing business. One day you'll discover that you're doing all you can and look for help. Sometime later, you realize that even with the help you have, you're hitting a ceiling of achievement because there are more opportunities than you have time to explore. You'll seek more help and continue to grow, and the cycle will repeat as your investment business expands along with your mastery of it. In our observations and experience, there will be 7 distinct and separate levels you will pass through on the path to becoming a receive-a-million millionaire real estate investor. Although the exact organizational makeup of your investing operation may vary slightly, the 7th and final level of investment business is sure to include one commonality. One day, you'll remove yourself from the routine daily business and allow a pre-selected, highly qualified individual or individuals to run your investment business for you. It's the place where you get to enjoy the financial wealth you've built without having to manage it actively. There are 3 basic components to the investment business of a millionaire real estate investor. There will be one part of your business dedicated to acquisition and disposition, one committed to administration, and one that handles your operations. In the beginning, you will run all three departments and either do all the work yourself or manage independent contractors from your work network to do these functions for you. But over time, as your investment portfolio grows and you increasingly rely on your work network, you'll see the wisdom in hiring an employee to do these jobs for you and only you. Let's take a quick look at the three areas of your investment business. The first area, acquisition and disposition, or A&D, is the last one you'll give up. A&D is the work of generating leads, evaluating opportunities, and doing deals. This is the heart of your investment business. Without leads, there are no opportunities. Without opportunities, there are no deals. And without deals, there's no income. It's that simple. You'll want to stay active in A&D for as long as you can. This is where you will earn the most money for your time, so it makes good financial sense to spend the most time there. Administration, or admin, is another story. This is the very first area we advise you to relinquish. The admin part of your investment business is the part that handles your legal and financial work, organizes your contracts and closings, and maintains your database and files. The more clerical in nature the work is, the sooner you may find yourself willing to farm it out to your work network and later hire someone to tackle these tasks for you. Interestingly, while some of these tasks fall under the broad title of admin, many are highly specialized. For example, unless you happen to be an accountant or lawyer by profession, you're probably best served not to advise yourself on complex tax or legal issues. You should contract this work out to qualified professionals in your work network. However, you may find it saves you money to pay for the advice of these professionals and then file your own tax returns with the IRS or record the minutes of the investment business meetings you keep for your legal entities. The last area is operations, ops, and it covers the broad area from leasing and property management to maintenance and construction. Whether you, someone in your network, or someone you hire does these tasks, you'll probably have to develop expertise in these areas to become a millionaire real estate investor. Since these tasks are tied directly to your vacancies and expenses, leasing and property management can have a big impact on your bottom line. When we discussed maximizing your NOI and own a million, we were pointing you toward the moment when you might hire contractors or employees to do this important work on your behalf. Maintenance and construction are similar, in that strong knowledge in these areas can both save and make you lots of money. The good news is that your continued work in A&D, particularly the estimation of repair costs for your acquisitions, will help you keep abreast of standard costs in these areas. For many investors, a property manager is the first non-admin employee they hire. Arguably, other than a full-time A&D person, no other position will save you as much time and energy. The moment you contract with or hire a property manager is the moment you cease to function as a full-time managing landlord. This means someone else is taking the call for the broken toilet and the wobbly ceiling fan or the broken furnace. Someone else is collecting rents and calling past dues. Someone else is freeing you up in a massive way to pursue A&D and build your business. As you can see in the chart in Figure 123 on the bonus CD, the investors we interviewed first made the important decision to stop doing it themselves and hire part or full-time administrative help. Every business has a certain amount of work like filing, record-keeping, organization, and errands that can be ignored for periods of time but not forgotten. At some point, those tasks must be done for your business to stay on track. But they can steal valuable lead generation time from your critical A&D work. That's why admin help almost always comes first. A highly focused investor probably can generate enough admin work to keep more than one person busy while the investor pursues opportunities and deals. If the first level is where you do everything, then the second level and the third level are where admin employees help you do more. The fourth level is really about bringing in a property manager. In our research and experience, that's almost always the first person hired for ops. A few of our investors chose a maintenance employee first, But those instances were rare and usually were the result of larger multifamily ownership. The fifth and sixth levels represent your growing investment business with ever-increasing needs for admin and ops employees, plus one significant addition, your first A&D hire. This is a person who gets the game of investing, and maybe someone from within your organization or your network who seems to have a knack for finding opportunities or doing deals. You'll want to find a fair way to compensate this person, whether through base salary, bonuses, or percentage splits, for doing this for you full-time. The final and most important stage is the seventh level, where you hand over the day-to-day operations of your investment business to another person. Up to this point, as your organization grew, you were acting not only as the owner and principal investor, but also as the company's CEO. It's now time to hire a CEO to replace you. By this time, the people in your organization with the gift of leadership should be revealing themselves to you. It's likely that one person is largely responsible for your admin functions and manages the other employees in that area for you. Similarly, another person probably is in charge of your ops. If multiple employees have joined you in your ongoing A&D efforts, it's possible that a leader is emerging in that area as well. Remember, A&D is the last area you should relinquish. And so it's just as likely that you're still providing primary daily leadership and accountability for your company's A&D. These talented individuals have demonstrated that they are committed to the goals of your investment business and have risen to leadership positions within it. You still manage them, but they skillfully manage many people and projects on your behalf. These emerging leaders probably will be the best candidates to slide into the role of CEO. The sobering truth about this transition is twofold. For one thing, no one will be able to do everything you do as well as you do, especially in the beginning. After all, you've spent years perfecting your investment models and the systems you use to manage your investment business. You know your models so well and are so good at implementing them because they most likely were built to match your natural strengths and compensate for your natural weaknesses. The talented individuals you've hired were brought in to complement, not replace, your skills. You can expect your CEO to stumble and struggle a bit in the beginning. You won't be freed right away, but most likely will have to mentor your CEO until both of you are confident that that person can do the job without supervision. That's sobering truth number one. Sobering truth number two is that your new CEO will probably be much better at some aspects of the job than you ever were. This is where you will have to rein in the natural competitiveness that helped you build your investment business in the first place. Because your CEO brings new strengths to the position, he or she may earn the right over time to change and even improve some of your systems. Your new role as a business owner will be to monitor that person's progression from duplicating the success you created to being allowed to tinker with it. Remember, you built your investment business on proven models. You should expect your CEO to do the same thing. The interesting thing about building a real estate investment business is that you have two distinct choices. On the one hand, you can build a large, active business, as Investor 34 did. On the other hand, you can choose to hire sparingly and count on your extensive work network for leverage. Both methods are valid. The big difference shows up at the seventh level. Investors who build bona fide businesses tend to be better positioned to step out and count on their unearned income. Businesses are about cash flow and rarely have caps on their growth. They can remain active and agile even when the primary investor steps away. Investors who build their investment enterprises primarily through their work networks are aiming toward a pseudo-seventh level. To fully achieve the seventh level, you'll have to hire your replacement. This path never leads to total leverage, even though, through outside property management, the investor may be far removed from the day-to-day work, he or she still will need to give the investments considerable attention. Those investments won't continue to grow your investment portfolio the way your replacement CEO would. This is really the path of preserving and maintaining wealth. Many of our investors selected this option. With the help of key partners and a property manager, they built large real estate portfolios that required less and less of their time. They knew how much they needed and didn't mind that their portfolios were unlikely to grow once they turned their attention elsewhere. They achieved a pseudo-seventh level, with lots of freedom and great rewards. Over time, you will be able to remove yourself from the day-to-day work of your investment business and focus on managing your CEO and key leaders. Instead of working in your business each day, you'll be able to work on it as little as a few hours a week. If you've ever wondered how entrepreneurs manage to run multiple businesses simultaneously, this explains it. They work on their businesses, managing key leaders, rather than working in the business every day.
Moving from managing your time to managing others.
Reaching the seventh level will involve an entirely new set of skills for a prospective millionaire investor: business and management skills. Instead of creating a pro forma system for a transaction, you'll be reviewing one made by someone who works for you. Instead of inspecting real estate, you'll be inspecting reports made by someone who looked at a property for you. The good news is that from the moment you began developing your work network, you were building the foundational skills necessary to make this transition from investor to business owner. That's what you did with every independent contractor you hired to fix your property, file your taxes, or manage a renovation. You had to tell them what you expected and then inspect their work to make sure it met your expectations. It's about communicating your standards and then inspecting to make sure you got what you expected. The decision to keep for yourself or assign to others the A&D, admin, and ops functions of your business always lies with where your time and their time are most valuably spent. Not only do you want to stay focused on your most dollar-productive activities, you want the talented members of your growing organization to do the same thing. If the bookkeeper who saves you thousands in accounting fees each year could save you tens of thousands as a property manager, or make you even more money scouting for opportunities, you may find yourself looking for a replacement bookkeeper. Choosing whether to contract with this person from your work network or employ this person outright involves the same financial common sense. The main difference lies in the length of time you pay the person. You engage contractors from job to job, but employees are engaged for the long term. This means you have to have enough work to justify their salaries and keep them engaged. Your progress through the seven levels is essentially a progression from I do it to we do it to they do it. In the beginning, you did everything and essentially paid yourself. As you developed your work network, you started contracting with others to leverage your time and profits. The moment your investment business began generating reliable income, those people had the option of bringing in full-time employees to grow it. This is the period when you'll be working with people inside and outside your organization. The seventh level is where you take on the role of business owner and run your business through the talented leaders you've hired. These leaders are the custodians of your investment business, an asset that still pays you money. While you'll still bring vision and values and standards to your business, you'll cease to run it on an everyday basis. That's the gift of the seventh level business: owning an investment business asset that pays you unearned income while demanding a comparatively small amount of your time.
'Tis better to give than to receive. Moving from wealth accumulation to wealth distribution.
In late December 2004, Business Week published its annual list of the top 50 philanthropists for the year. On one end of the spectrum were Microsoft's Bill and Melinda Gates, who donated an astounding $10 billion to charity, a one-year gift equal to 20% of their total net worth. On the other end was Martha Ingram of Ingram Industries, who gave away 30% of her net worth for a total of $116 million in charitable giving. The generosity of those individuals was inspiring and instructive. Clearly, those wealth builders understood that it is, as they say, better to give than to receive. that money is good for the good it can do. What they also understood is that in order to give a million, you must first receive it. One of the greatest gifts of wealth building is the ability to share the wealth you've built. Eli Broad of K&B Homes stated that the reason he gave over $1.3 billion to charity in 2004 was that he'd always been interested in making a difference, and he thought that in just about all our giving, the money made a difference. Fortunately, the gift of great giving is available to all. Many top givers credited their fortunes to what we believe is the most attainable and accessible wealth-building vehicle around, real estate. My personal wealth-building journey and careful observation of others have helped me understand that there are clear financial stages to a person's life. You'll find them reflected in Figure 125 on the bonus CD. They are wealth education, wealth accumulation, wealth protection, and finally, wealth distribution. It's not that complicated if you take a moment to consider it. After all, we have to learn about wealth building in order to do it. Once we've accumulated wealth, it's only natural to want to protect what we have worked so hard to earn. The last stage is the one that is overlooked most often, the time when, having secured our own future, we look to help others. For some people, wealth distribution happens in the form of a will. For others, it's about sharing their good fortune earlier so that they can see the gifts in action. Whether you choose to distribute your wealth at the end of your journey or along the way, I encourage you to internalize one important fact. Financial wealth is never truly owned. The most one can achieve is to be a good steward for a time and then pass it on. Philanthropy is defined as the giving and sharing of time, talent, or treasure intended for the common good. It is our hope that as you progress through the four stages of this book, Think a Million, Buy a Million, Own a Million, and Receive a Million, you'll be striving to achieve your personal financial potential as well as your philanthropic potential. Building wealth is a wonderful and rewarding journey, but it's even better when the wealth is shared. As you consider the time when you can truly receive a million, I hope you'll choose to receive more than you need and share what you don't. The journey to receive a million ends where you decide to end it. You can reach for $1 million or for more or less. Your personal goals are your own. We encourage you to use big models designed for more than you think you'll ever want or need. Never put caps on your financial potential. Your potential to buy, own, receive, and even give all the wealth you could imagine.
Points to remember. You can, if you choose, reach a place in your investment life where you can step out of the day-to-day work of investing and receive $1 million annual pre-tax income. When you can step out of the daily investment business without losing your income, you've reached the seventh level, the path to people leverage. Your investment business will have three basic components. They are acquisition and disposition, administration, and operations. As your business grows, you'll hire talent in these areas and over time, increasingly hand over day-to-day operations to those you recognize have the gift of leadership. The transition toward removing yourself from day-to-day business can be tricky. Keep in mind the following. When you eventually hire a CEO to replace you, you must manage and mentor him or her until you are both confident the job can be done without supervision or safety nets. Accept that your new CEO will bring new strengths to the role and will likely earn the right over time to change and improve your systems. Understand that reaching the seventh level means using new skills. You will employ business and management skills as you move from I do it to we do it to they do it. As you move from wealth accumulation to wealth distribution, strive not only for personal financial potential, but also to reach your philanthropic potential. Remember, money is good for the good it can do. Part 3, staying on top. Putting it all together. Never take your eye off the ball.
In July 2004, on a summer night made for baseball, Derek Jeter made one of the great catches in baseball history. Playing for the New York Yankees against the rival Boston Red Sox, Jeter saved the day. In the 12th inning of a tie game, with two men on and two men out, Red Sox outfielder Trot Nixon blooped a high fly ball down the left field foul line. Even with men closer to the ball than he, Jeter took off like a rocket the instant the ball was hit. As he raced over from his shortstop position to make the play, passing at least one other player in the process, his momentum forced him to make a perilous head-first dive into the stands after making the catch. Jeter eventually emerged with the help of the fans, his face battered and bruised, holding the ball firmly in his glove and ending the inning. Thanks to Jeter's heroic catch, the Yankees would win the game one inning later. Although baseball through the years has seen some catches just as good, there has never been a better one. What struck me most about that catch was that Jeter never took his eye off the ball, not once. And that's what it took, because there is only one way to make a play like that. Focus. Focus, driven by motivation, supported by knowledge and skill, causes one to take action without a thought about not succeeding. Never underestimate the power of purpose and focus. It's how baseball's uncatchable balls are caught, and it's how incredible wealth is attained in the financial world. Whether it's athletic victories or financial wealth, if you want to win, focus on what really matters and never, ever take your eye off the ball.
Anyone can do it. Not everyone will.
My son and his friends say they want to become financially wealthy someday, and most adults I know say the same thing. It seems everyone wants financial wealth and independence. I believe they can achieve it, but not everyone will. This is a natural law of financial wealth. It's called Pareto's Law. Earlier, I shared Pareto's principle, or the 80-20 rule, as the concept of the vital few versus the trivial many. The rule was discovered accidentally during a historical study of the distribution of financial wealth. Pareto was studying wealth. In the book, The 80-20 Principle, Richard Koch explains that what Pareto uncovered was both astonishing and predictable. 20% of the people will own 80% of the income and wealth in any society, in any economy, at any time. Some will become financially wealthy, but most won't. This predictable imbalance takes concrete form in the haves and have-nots. However, it is actually the tale of the willful and the wishful, because whether you're in the 20% or the 80% is a choice, your choice. Financial wealth and independence may be predictably imbalanced, but they are neither preordained nor predestined. You and you alone get to decide your financial future. I believe Pareto was right. Not everyone will become financially wealthy. But I also believe that anyone can. The formula is simple. Focus, driven by purpose. Basically, you have a choice, to focus or not. What you do with this choice will make all the difference in your financial world. Don't spend the majority of your time on minor things. Don't major in the minors. Decide what matters to you. Decide how to get it. And then focus on getting it. Give it passionate intention and serious attention. Don't just give it time and effort. Give it focused time and focused effort.
A financial track to run on.
If you want to be a millionaire real estate investor, you need a map that will get you there. You need a proven financial track to run on that accomplishes four things. Number one, it establishes your financial base camp. Number two, a track that protects your future. Third, one that funds your future. And fourth, a financial track that helps you stay the course.
Stage one, establish your base camp.
The first stage in building a financial track to run on is to establish your financial base camp. The key to this is to incorporate the net worth model into your life. The first step is to create a personal budget and stick to it. This will allow you to make sure you don't spend all your money and will have some to invest. A personal budget will challenge you to live well, but well below your affordable means until your financial wealth has been accumulated. By following a budget, you'll begin to understand why you buy expensive things after you become wealthy and not before. In the end, you'll come to understand that the first step to becoming a millionaire is to live a controlled consumption lifestyle. The second step in establishing your financial base camp is to keep an ongoing net worth worksheet, your wealth-building scorecard. Allocate an hour each week to looking it over and asking one question: how can I grow my net worth and cash flow? Each time you purchase something, you'll begin to connect the dots between what you do with money and the way it affects your financial wealth. Over time, you'll come to understand why millionaires say that financial wealth is not the same as earned income and that saving is not the same as investing. The last step in building your base camp is to avoid debt. Although this is simple to say, it's hard to do. The trick is to make a commitment to avoid financing your personal costs of living. Unfortunately, many people get wrapped up in a borrow-and-buy lifestyle. Millionaires do the exact opposite, adopting the mantra, "save up, then buy," especially for major purchases. Don't let your credit card do your saving for you. As a rule, try to pay by cash or cash equivalent. In other words, treat your credit card like cash and pay off the balance each month. Millionaires don't use debt-carrying plastic credit. They have no interest in paying high interest, and neither do you. If you can, buy on the basis of needs and avoid a wants purchasing lifestyle. When something breaks, always think repair first, used second, and new last. Your goal is to avoid non-asset-based debt at all costs. But in the end, if you must incur debt, try to make sure the debt term and asset longevity match up.
Stage 2. Protect your future.
The next step to creating your financial track is to protect your future. There are four fundamental ways to do this. The first way is to set up an emergency fund. The second is to purchase a home. The third is to get adequate insurance. The fourth is to create an estate plan. The first thing you do to protect your future? Save 3 to 6 months of living expenses for an emergency fund. You need a safety net so that no matter what happens, you have options. Expect this reserve amount to go up as your net worth goes up. Next, purchase a home. This not only is forced savings, it also secures the one asset that determines your lifestyle more than any other. As with any other purchase, buy on the basis of needs first and wants second. Buy what you think you can afford, not what a lender will lend you. Buy with your family's plans in mind. Don't underbuy, necessitating a move too soon, or overbuy, anticipating more income in the future. It's a tight line to walk, but you must walk it. If you do underbuy, you probably will end up making this your first rental property. Overbuy, and it might put you in the poorhouse. Don't become house rich and income poor. The real key to freedom here lies in putting your payments on a fast path to owning your home free and clear. Some might disagree with this advice, but as a real estate professional who has seen both sides of this argument, I say do it. 2 extra payments a year on a 30-year mortgage pays off your home in 20 years. Do the math. Third, protect your future by insuring it in key areas. You'll need adequate disability insurance to protect a minimum lifestyle. You'll need adequate life insurance to help support your family and pay any estate taxes. You'll need the best affordable health insurance for you and your family, You'll need adequate replacement value and liability insurance for your home, car, and personal property. If you get your insurance agent, accountant, and estate planning attorney together, you should be able to figure all this out in about an hour. Finally, create an estate plan. It must include simple but carefully considered entity planning, appropriate trusts and wills, plus strategies to minimize or eliminate inheritance taxes and maximize creditor protection. The investment you make early on for the services of an excellent estate planning attorney will, in the end, make you money. When Sam Walton was a young man just starting out in business and could least afford it, he set up his estate plan. As a result, at the end of his life, one of the greatest personal fortunes ever amassed was transferred to his heirs with little to no taxes paid. Millionaires get this, and so should you.
Stage 3. Fund your future.
This is where the fun, or perhaps we should say the fund, begins. It's time to put the 5 real estate models together and start the process of finding your future by first funding it. Let's step back for a second, look at the big picture, and see how all of what we've covered works. Sometimes an aerial view puts things in perspective. We've covered all the major steps of a millionaire real estate investor's investment path. When you take them all together, they add up to the 6-step investment plan you will follow. It's time to take the instruction and make it strategic. It'll be helpful if you refer to Figure 126 on the bonus CD for the next part we cover.
Number 1. Get motivated.
Visualize your life. What you would be doing and what your life would be like if you didn't have to work for a living. Can you see it? These are your big goals. Can you verbalize what you'll get from living that life? These are your big whys. While holding on to this clear mental picture, write down the monthly dollar amount you would need to fund it. Go a step further and figure out how much capital you will need to have invested to deliver this monthly amount in the form of unearned income. What you will have is your big goals, your big whys, and your future cash flow and net worth targets. The last two are your financial wealth building goals. Make sure you've accounted for family growth, education costs, expected needs, and some unexpected ones. If you have these two numbers, you have the drivers of your investment plan. You're in harmony. Your financial targets match your personal goals. These financial numbers are in touch and in sync with your biggest reasons for living big. And that is where the true motivation to build wealth comes from.
Number 2. Acquire knowledge and focus.
It's time to become an investor. To achieve this, you have to do what investors do. Understand money and path it. Pick the real estate market you want to invest in and learn it. Then build your work and leads networks and develop them. School is never out for the successful. Be clear about your must-focus areas and master them. Remember, you learn to earn before you niche to get rich. Put together a reading list each year and read those books, and do the same for instructional audio tapes, videos, and DVDs. Attend one seminar a year about a topic you need to know better. Hang out with your network members and listen to their experience and advice. Most important, wake up every day and say, "I'm an investor. Today could be the day I find an opportunity and make a deal."
Number 3. Generate leads.
With money, knowledge, and relationships behind you, it's time to generate investment opportunity leads. First, put your criteria down on paper. If they're not written down, you probably don't have them. Next, memorize this list so that it becomes like a song in your head you can't help remembering. Now go prospect and market for leads that meet your criteria. Pick a few methods and give them enough time to see if they will work. Since your criteria, niche, and target geographic market create a unique formula, You'll have to work with your lead generation approach for a while to begin to see predictable results. Time block your calendar for lead generation time and protect that time. Set the goal of generating a lead a day. Put those leads in your database and then work them.
Number 4. Convert suspects to prospects.
Suspects and prospects are completely different. One won't and one will. One wastes your time. One is worth your time. One costs you money. One makes you money. One isn't worth any effort. And one is worth all the effort. The trick is to be able to figure out quickly which is which. When you can do that, you're doing some of the most critical work investors do. You'll pick your prospects by inspecting the property, interviewing the seller, and getting your network involved. Your goal is to be able to say, "My prospects are looking up." You'll be able to say this when you know about a property that meets your criteria and is owned by a seller who will meet your terms.
Number 5. Buy real estate investments.
When an investment opportunity shows up, move quickly to control the property. Simply put, make an offer. Since your real estate contracts will have an evaluation option period, you haven't committed to buy yet, but you have committed to try to buy. Begin the negotiation process by making an offer whose terms make the property match your criteria. Negotiate with the seller with the win-win goal of meeting his or her selling objectives while meeting your criteria to invest. If you and the seller can agree, you've acquired a deal.
Number 6. Gain insight.
Once you've acquired an investment property, follow through on your strategy for it. Improve and sell, or improve and hold. You'll need to evaluate your deal as you go along and ask your network to do the same thing. Some deals will be better than others. That's the way it goes for every investor. Some will be home runs, and some will be bunts. And you want to eliminate, or at least limit, your strikeouts. Remember that success is the result of good judgment. Good judgment is the result of experience. And experience is the result of bad judgment. You'll make mistakes. But as long as you buy it right, all mistakes are survivable. In the end, your experiences and the feedback you get from others will give you knowledge and insights that will help you create even better deals in the future. That's what you want. Lots of experience and better deals.
Stage 4. Stay the course.
The final stage of building your financial track is to create and sustain energy so that you can stay the course. Don't worry about the economy or the market. Warren Buffett says he doesn't. It's your criteria that matter, not the conditions that might create their availability. Stick to your plan and invest on the basis of your criteria. Figure 127 on the bonus CD lays out the specific approach you should take. You'll need to devote about 10 hours a week to this wealth-building program. You can do a little each day, or you can do a week's worth each weekend. The choice is yours. Just stay on course. As straightforward as the chart looks, implementing it can be challenging. Successful investing in wealth building is a process, not an event. It's an endurance race, not a quick sprint. And you'll need to create and store energy to run it. Burnout lurks behind every property you must go see and every seller you must interview and negotiate with. You cannot afford to let this happen to you. You must guard against weariness and distractions so that you can continue investing and enjoying it. It's a long haul, and if you don't stay the course, you'll be shortchanging your investment plan and yourself. You'll need an energy plan to become and remain a millionaire investor.
The Millionaire Real Estate Investor's Energy Plan.
The world is made up of energy. The things we think of as solid are just energy. The things we think of as liquid are just energy. The earth, the sky, and we are energy. You are energy too. All these things are energy in different forms, but at the deepest level, it's all still energy. Recognize this simple and undeniable fact. You and I are energy. We receive it and transmit it. We find it and lose it. We store it and leak it. We conserve it and spend it. We breathe it in and breathe it out. We hold it in and we let it go. We are more of who we are when we have a lot of it, and less than we can be when we have only a little. Energy comes to us when we are doing the right things and leaves us when we aren't. When we focus on what matters most for our lives, we are connecting to the right kinds of energy, and our lives burn bright and surge ahead. If you want to maximize your life opportunities, you have to slow down enough to refuel with the energy that matters. Because you are matter, and you do matter. Plus, to get the most out of your life, you have to connect your life to energy that does matter. In our research on top sales performers, we came to understand a simple formula they used to bring energy into their personal and professional lives. As we interviewed our millionaire real estate investors, we discovered they had a strong force powering their investing. They approached their real estate investment activities with vitality and endurance. And as we got to know them, we got a true sense of their personal energy. As we probed, we realized they were similar to the top performers we had studied in other areas. They had an unspoken energy plan they practiced that renewed them personally and gave them the energy they needed to do the activities that mattered most to them. Remember our definition of wealth? It's abundance. An abundant life is a life focused not on just anything, but on the things that matter most. A wealthy life is a life that is filled with abundance in the areas that matter. Millionaires are individuals who have an abundance of financial wealth. But what good is money if you lose everything else to get it? The true abundant life millionaire gets this and seeks to find energy, not just financially, but in other areas that matter. If you want the best energy possible and the most abundant life possible, try following the simple formula that's outlined in Figure 128 on the bonus CD. Each morning, meditate or pray for clarity and guidance to fill your soul with spiritual energy. Then exercise for cardio and muscular strength, and eat properly for nutrition. That will fill your body with physical energy. Hug, kiss, and laugh with your loved ones for connectedness and joy to fill your heart with emotional energy. Plan and calendar your day for focus, which will fill your mind with mental energy. Review your personal budget and net worth worksheets for financial clarity in order to fill your finances with investment energy. Finally, lead, generate, and see real estate for investment opportunities. This will fill your time with wealth-building energy. Do all this before noon every day you can. Why so early in the day? Because it is far easier to control your time at the beginning of the day than at the end of it, when you may be tired or distracted. It won't be possible to do it every single day, but when you do, energy will flow so powerfully into your life that you will float and fly through the day. The goal in life is not to be a disciplined person, but to be a person of selected disciplines. With the energy plan, you are selecting the disciplines and energies you want and making time to bring them into your life. If you make sure these things get done, you'll be pulled through the rest of the day, achieving and accomplishing at levels you never dreamed were possible. Energy will have come into your life and will be fueling it. You will have become an abundant person, a person of wealth in the areas that matter most.
Money doesn't care.
The world doesn't care if you're a millionaire. And certainly money doesn't care. You're the one who cares, and that is as it should be. You should care because it's your life. The key to having money is wanting it and knowing why you want it. The key to being a millionaire is wanting a lot of money and doing what it takes to get it. The key to being happy with a lot of money is understanding what money can and can't do for you. We all have priorities in life, the people who matter the most, and the things we'd most like to do and have. Money, whether we have it or not, isn't intended to define or redefine our priorities. It is intended to help finance them. Money is just money. It will expose and amplify you, but it won't change you. It's simply a medium of exchange that gives you freedom and allows you to buy what you need. The key to happiness is not more money. Happiness is happiness. Our life purpose is to have the best life possible in the time allotted us. It's not the amount, it's the value, and you can't buy that. Money doesn't buy value as it pertains to the best life possible. Money merely reflects what you value and does what it's told. Money sits there until it's called. So put money in its proper place. When you know why you want money and are realistic about what it will do for you, you are in a great place to go call it. You want it. You know why you want it, and you are ready to go get it. But make no mistake about it. Money has its own rules and disciplines, and it doesn't care who you are. If you break its rules, it'll break you. In other words, when you break money's rules, you're broke. Don't be financially illiterate. Learn the rules and enjoy the rewards. It's your life. Money doesn't care about it one way or another. But you do.
Time to get going.
This book is about three interconnected things: making money, by investing in real estate. It's a package deal. We hope you're now thinking big, thinking like an investor, and thinking real estate. Anyone can become a millionaire. And if you take the steps we've outlined, you'll be able to change the title of this book to The Millionaire Real Estate Investor. Anyone can do it. And I did.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.